stumble bum play that you hit the Bears with.
You like that?
You like that?
It was clever.
You like that?
Jason Leisure.
I will fight Chris Emma in Starbucks. I will fight him in a Panera, a Dunkin' Donuts, a Quiznos, a White Hen, a Schlotsky's. Name the time, name the place. I'll be there, Chris Emma.
Sounds good.
Bears reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times.
With the first two players you picked, Loveland and Burton, both seem like guys that fit really well with things Ben has talked about, and obviously that's your goal, is to give him the guys he needs. Can you give some insight as to how Ben influenced picking those specific players?
Yeah, they fit really well in Ben's offense. These guys fit well in every offense. They're dynamic players. But just going through, Ben and I spent a lot of time watching these players. Our scouts did a great job identifying them, and then we kind of talked about how they fit and what we're trying to do. If the opportunity popped up for us to select them. And also with a young quarterback, guys that you can get the ball too quick and then make plays after for you is a really good place to be, especially as a young quarterback.
Jason Leisure with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
Jason Leisure is here. We can throw some beef questions at him. He joins us now on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. We have been discussing, Mr. Leisure, the idea that this is a little fun and different, where the rivalry between the Packers and the Bears is playing out with the coaches maybe just a couple of passive-aggressive shots here and there at each other. How do you read it?
It reminds me a little bit of when I was in college and I went to Tulane, and LSU is an hour up the road. And we had a huge rivalry with LSU that LSU was not aware of.
That's funny.
I mean, these days, though, Tulane's doing pretty well versus.
I think LSU still doesn't know that we have a rivalry with them.
That's probably
correct.
You
have to win. You have to win. I remember being up there at Lambeau midweek at some point in the last several years, and when Aaron Rodgers was still up there. And Aaron Rodgers was commenting at the time, I think Matt Eberflus was the coach, yeah. He was commenting at the time how that's just what all these Chicago coaches talk about when they get hired.
Yes.
I'm paraphrasing, but like every few years, one of these guys gets hired, and that's his thing, is we're going to beat the Packers, and then we hear it from the next guy 3 years later.
No, you're right. You're right. And Lovey said it famously when he
Lovey did it better than anybody.
Yeah, you're right. So it is a bit of a trope for the nail to come in and take a shot at the hammer, for sure. And I'll give Ben Johnson credit for making it personal in a way that resonated with the opposition. The hammer seems to, in my opinion, be thinking about the nail, especially because Ben actually did it, didn't he? Like Detroit has stepped up and become the best team in the division when Ben was there. So he's got that in his back pocket. Maybe it resonates more.
Well, there's been that fits the entire vibe that Ben Johnson has brought into the Bears since he got hired in January. There has been this just relentless confidence. There has not been a stutter, a hesitation, a just kind of measuring, being careful what he says. There hasn't been any of that. I mean, I think he has found a very good middle ground of being as confident as he is and conveying that to everyone in the building and the public without doing what they did last year, where they were basically pre-celebrating the great season they were going to have and then didn't.
So what did you make? I agree with all that. What did you make of Ben's big picture conversations that you got to hear after the draft? That might've been the most impactful sound. Yeah, I'll do respect to Ryan Poles, but hearing Ben talk about his vision and how these guys fit in was worthwhile. What'd you make of it?
Yeah, and if you look at just the actions, I mean, that's what all Ben Johnson has done. All he did for a little while when he got hired was talk, and everybody can do that. It doesn't always tell you something. Then you start to see the moves that they make. You see the moves they made in free agency on the offensive and defensive line, which that was to be expected no matter who came in as the head coach. I think the draft has been the most telling as far as Ben's vision, if you will, Matt.
Oh, we will. Picks, we will, Jason. We will.
I did it for you, buddy. These picks are Ben Johnson picks. And that doesn't mean that, oh, Ben Johnson calls the shots now. Ryan Poles just does whatever Ben Johnson says. There is some element of Ryan Poles needs to give Ben Johnson what he wants for Ben Johnson to succeed, and thus Ryan Poles succeeds. So Ryan Poles giving Ben Johnson whatever he wants or needs benefits Ryan Poles as well. There is a shared interest in this. But a couple of things stand out to me about their first two picks. Colston Loveland, the tight end at number 10 overall. Luther Burden, the wide receiver at number 39 overall. Both of them fit the Ben Johnson saying that you are just, that you've already heard a lot and you're going to hear over and over. This is his version of BU or the Hits principle or whatever. It's make different things look the same and make the same things look different that he got from John Shoup when John Shoup was his offensive coordinator at North Carolina and Ben Johnson was a walk-on quarterback. It means show somebody something they think they've seen a million times and then do something exotic out of it. Or show somebody something really baffling and puzzling and then go to one of your core concepts, one of your core bread and butter plays. Luther Burden is a guy who can play slot and play outside. So you're sending him out in the huddle. There's a lot of guesswork for the defense about where he's going to actually end up once they break the huddle and once he's in motion and things like that. Colston Loveland is the same kind of thing, a very versatile tight end where you're going to have to do a lot of calculating on where he's going to be. And the combination of him and Cole Kmet and what the way they're going to use them is really effective. I don't know how long that's going to last. I don't know how long either guy is going to be satisfied with their individual production in that situation, but they are going to be together on the field a lot this season. And I think it just opens up a lot of things that make it that just open the door wide for Ben Johnson's creativity. The other part of those picks, though, is a key question that comes up when a new coach comes in, and it's really coming up here. Ryan Poles thinks he's built this great core of skill players. Ben Johnson comes in and says, well, maybe I don't love the guys that you love quite so much. I might not love Cole Kmet and DJ Moore and DeAndre Swift quite as much as you do. And we need either upgrades or we need additions. We need more to go with those guys.
I really like it because I feel like there was an inequity, and I guess it should be that way, or it's built that way where the general manager and the head coach aren't always equals. But I feel like this is more partnership than top-down management. And that's why I'm okay with this draft. This is the whole reason that you went and got this guy. The whole reason that you brought him in is because you feel like he knows something that you don't, that you didn't have in your last coach. So if that means that you have to acquiesce a little bit in the name of partnership and getting better and winning, I'm totally good with Ryan Poles doing that.
Yeah, bullseye. I mean, you're exactly right. Acquiesce a little bit. Acquiesce as much as you have to, because it makes no sense to go get this guy, to go get the most coveted coaching candidate in the league over the last 3 years and pay him what you're paying him and then say, well, hold on there, champ. You just call the offense, you know, I know we're 15 and 36 the last 3 years, but champ, we kind of know what we're doing as far as picking players around here.
Oh, calling somebody champ is just so derisive.
Big guy.
Oh, man. Well, big guy, yeah. That's a problem.
Chief. Don't call me champ, friend. Don't call me buddy, friend.
Who do you think Ben was talking about when he said that some people in the building got a wake-up call? You know, we talked about that. Like, you know, what players might he have been thinking about in your mind?
Cole Kmet, DJ Moore, in a way. I mean, DJ Moore is still going to be a focal point. Braxton Jones. Definitely. And Jervon Dexter.
Boy, it's a good list. Because especially the way the contracts go in the NFL, I can imagine some of our listeners saying, but Cole just signed. And it's not like Cole's going anywhere this year. And DJ just signed an extension. Not like he's going anywhere this year, but after this year, you could move on from these guys, couldn't you?
You can move on from Kmet. And I'm not saying that's what they're going to do. You definitely have these guys this year, so nobody needs to panic.
And I don't think you
call
need
Fanatics
to
and get the jersey refund for their Cole Kmet jersey or whatever.
Yeah, you don't need to even move on from Kmet. You just need to maybe change the way that he is viewed.
Sure, but DJ is the one I keep thinking about. Like,
well, that contract is a little bit tougher. The Komet thing, though, so they're going to sit here and tell you, and they've already been telling you, oh, these guys can play together. No problem. These guys can play together. We'll have them both on the field at the same time. We did that all the time in Detroit. Well, if you look at Detroit last year, Sam Laporta, we all know about him. He had 83 targets. The other tight end, you probably don't know his name. It's Brock Wright, and he had 15 targets, I believe. So that's usually how it goes. I've seen few examples where there are two high production tight ends in the passing game. New England had it a long time ago with Rob Gronkowski and he who shall not be named. But there's not a lot of other teams that have pulled that off. And Komet did just sign a big contract, but there is an out on that contract after this year for $3 million. In dead cap space, which is nothing now. I mean, that's pennies in the new salary cap.
Don't you forget Durham Smythe, my friend. Do not go dismissing that guy.
Yeah. Right. DJ Moore, it's a couple of years. I think he's got two more years before you could even think about getting out of that contract if you want to. Now, that being said, Ben Johnson might come in and look and say, you guys were thinking DJ Moore's a legit number one receiver. I had Amon-Ra St. Brown. That's what they really look like. This isn't quite that. But I think he would still look at DJ Moore and say, this is a guy that can play out of the slot, can play out wide, can play out of the backfield. There are some things that Ben Johnson could do with DJ Moore.
You know, we're talking to Jason Leisure from the Sun-Times here on Spiegel & Holmes. I referenced it the other day briefly. Then I think I threw it out as a tease again, Lawrence, and I haven't had a chance to bring it up. I heard this from a good source that the way they're looking at Kieran Amagaji is as he has to prove them anything. They don't believe anything about him in terms of what his possibilities are. He's a rookie. He's a rookie all over again with a different offensive line coach, a different OC, a different philosophy.
A different head coach.
Different head coach. That it doesn't matter where it was drafted or anything that happened last year. He's got a chance to make an impression right now, right here, and in preseason, but he is guaranteed absolutely nothing in terms of a role. I heard that the other day, post-draft, and that sounds very sensible to me. Jason, your thoughts?
It makes sense. I mean, if we look at a couple different angles on that, they just drafted Ozzie Trapillo in the second round at 56 overall. You draft somebody at that spot.
They're playing.
You assume they're starting for you that year. You assume that's a second round, 56th overall. That guy should start as a rookie. So he's obviously ahead of Kieran Amagaji on the depth chart, and I don't see how he's not ahead of Braxton Jones, even if they don't say that or they don't put that in writing very clearly. But one of the things, Lawrence, you I don't know how much this comes up in the other sports, but this is such a football thing, an NFL thing that I'm sure you are familiar with from your time covering the league closely, and it's frustrating, and it is just a pitfall that GMs fall into that ends up costing themselves their job, is this long, long leash and this commitment to guys that they picked and that they picked high. They will give them so much more of a runway to figure it out than they would for another player. And that lack of objectivity hurts you. Oh, I think it helps Ryan Poles that this very fresh voice in Ben Johnson, who has a lot of power, and you are very happy to give him a lot of power, comes in at this stage. When you think you've been building towards something, and there are signs that you have been, but again, you went 5-12 last year. Last year, you were 5-12. You were that bad. A lot of years, you're picking top three if you're 5-12. You need somebody to come in and say and check your work and say, I don't know that this is what you think it is with this player or that player or that player. That's healthy. And that's a positive for Ryan Poles. That's a positive for the Bears.
I just wrote down, for no reason at all, Velus.
Ha, that's funny. I was thinking.
Or you could write Mitch or Anthony Miller. Like you've seen it over and over where guys got so much more of a chance than they should have got.
You referenced, does it happen in other sports? I was thinking about Patrick Williams. Myself.
God, that's, don't bring him up.
I'm sorry. But it does cross over sometimes, for sure. But maybe, do you think it's football guys more? You think it's football guys more?
I think it is because the contracts, because in the other ones, you know, if you draft someone or you sign them to an extension, there's no cutting them like there is in football.
I mean, We're dealing with it in baseball right now. We've got to send him back to swing school. Where was he? He was in AAA. Well, where's he going to go now? He's going to go to Arizona. Are they playing baseball in Arizona? The Diamondbacks are. What's he going to be doing? Playing for them? No. He's going to be hitting the ball off a tee. We're going to start there.
That's Mr. David's guy.
Is swing school a real thing? I've never heard that term.
That's basically what they're doing with Colson Montgomery. They're sending him to below A swing school so he can go work some stuff out in Camelback Ranch.
Not swing tackle school. That's where Braxton Jones may have to go if Ozzy gets the job on the left side.
Hey, Matt, if that happens, yeah. If Braxton Jones is your swing tackle, possibly best swing tackle in the league, I mean, that's legitimate depth. Braxton Jones is an awesome asset to you as a swing tackle. If you're that good that he's your swing tackle, that you're in really good shape. Then you can come in and talk about best depth on the offensive line I've seen.
After going through all of this, being in the room up there too, who was the most interesting of the draft picks?
Well, you can't go with the top guys if you're going to say that.
Sure you can, if that's what it was.
It all creates interesting situations because with Loveland, you're like, well, now what happens with Komet? And with Burden, there are question marks about, you know, is he an Anthony Miller type or is he someone that is going to be able to learn and refine his game with really good coaching here? Is Trapillo walking in, penciled in their minds as day one starting left tackle, I assume it would be. And Shamar Turner is really interesting to me because there is so much potential for him as a pass rushing threat at defensive tackle that's the guy I think I would pick if I had to pick one instead of rattling through all of them like I am right now. Shamar Turner is super interesting to me because that's a guy you get at the end of the second round. It's a guy you get much like with the conversation we're having about Ben Johnson's influence on the offensive picks. You have Dennis Allen. You have not only what you see on film from Shamar Turner, but what you're hearing from Dennis Allen about what he can develop him into and what Dennis's vision, Matt, is for Shamar Turner. I think that's a really interesting pick that could be a good one for them. Texas A&M had one of the best defensive lines in the country last year in college football, and he was at the center of it.
You know, the one I can't wrap my head around still is Hippolyte, the fourth round backer. And we asked Dave Wanstead, who's been so good at voicing the nuance and difference between Dennis Allen's defense and Matt Eberflus's defense. And Wani was basically at a loss. Wani's like, there's a core special teamer for you. You know, like, do you draft a core special team linebacker in the fourth round when you have other needs, Jason?
Yes, you do, because okay. That's how the draft works. I mean, you don't, not on purpose, but that's what ends up happening most of the time to fourth round picks. I was looking, Matt, last week, I think it was, at the third round picks for, I want to say it was 22 and 23 draft classes around the league.
That's a party right there. Were you doing that at home? Were you drinking? Were you hanging out? That's all.
It was just for fun. This is the kind of stuff I do. This is sports nerd stuff. This is like, you know, you're Feel in you. The car with your wife and you're silent for 5 minutes and she's like, what are you thinking about? And I was just thinking about Sean Marion and whether he'll eventually be a Hall of Famer.
You don't do that.
They never believe us when we say that, but that's exactly what is going through our heads.
You can't say that. You say, I was thinking about how hard you work for the family and how much it means to me.
That's what I should say.
And I wonder if I express it enough, honey. That's what I was thinking about.
I was thinking about all the little things you do that go unnoticed. I was looking up for work because I get in this conversation with people a lot of times, and the Bears would have this argument with me where they'll say, oh, look at all these draft picks we have. We have this third round pick. That's valuable too. And I always say, no, they're not valuable after the second round. First and second round, you're drafting guys that you think can become above average starters, if not Pro Bowl players, and guys that should be able to start right away at most positions. After that, it's a lot of guessing. And the numbers, so 22 and 23 draft classes league-wide, third round picks, it's somewhere around 40 to 45% of those guys became regular starters in their first however many years it's been since then. 40 to 45%. It's less than half. So you are really hoping that you find something in the third round, let alone the fourth round. I didn't look at those numbers. I assume they're worse. So if you draft people in the fourth round that are core special teams players that are around for a little while, That's great. I think for me, once you get, for sure, once you get out of the third round, you're just looking for, does anybody left in this draft, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round, have just one outstanding quality? Do they have something amazing and remarkable about them? And in this guy's case, in Hippolyte's case, he's incredibly fast. He clocked a 4.39 at his pro day in the 40-yard dash. That's really good. And in the fourth round, give me that, and let's see what we can figure out with that.
Similarity scores for Sean Marion on Basketball Reference include Scottie Pippen. Scottie Pippen! Elton Brand.
Wait, senior or junior, Scottie
Pippen? Senior.
Okay.
Elton Brand, Adrian Dantley, John Havlicek, Dominique Wilkins, Kevin McHale. I didn't realize Sean Marion.
The Matrix? Hell yeah.
And to be clear, you meant him and not Sean Merriman, right? It's a very different conversation.
No. Sean Marion with his weird jump shot. And he's not in the Hall of Fame, right? In this league where everybody is in the Hall of Fame.
What were you thinking about? I don't know. That time that Lovie Smith fought off howler monkeys with a machete? Is that what you were thinking about? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'll be dialed into my laptop. My wife will be on the couch. She'll be like, well, can you come over here and talk to me? I'm like, no, I'm looking at Michael Jordan's Basketball Reference page. Can you believe he shot 47% this year? That's crazy.
The correct answer is, I'm just amazed at how patient you've been with me as I work through my issues, honey. Like, I really just appreciate
you. What are you thinking about? Why O'Neal Cruz took that weird route to the ball?
I was thinking about that home run Joe Carter hit in the 93 World Series. That's incredible. Yeah. Still,
it's one of the great
calls.
That's
my earliest baseball memory.
It's a great celebration, too. Like, that celebration of him going down first base was pretty awesome.
What year was that, Matt?
93. Yeah, 93.
That was the year they beat the White Sox, where the White Sox won the division?
Yes.
And then the next year, the White Sox should have won the World Series, but then there
should've
was
won
no
everything.
Baseball.
Should have won everything, Lawrence.
It should have been
Frank Thomas should have won the Triple Crown, man.
Yep, it should have been White Sox Expos. And
oh, gosh, a classic matchup.
And we didn't get it. So are the Marlins
two teams that no longer exist today. They're like artifacts.
That hurts.
Are the Chicago White Sox?
By the way, Tom Cheek, the Blue Jays play-by-play voice, that call is brought up by so many different broadcasters as an underrated legendary home run call in the history of the game. Tom Cheek. I didn't even really know the name until I think Buck brought him up. Several other people brought him up. That's one of the great moments in World Series history, Jason. So thank you for Sean Marion and for the Joe Carter home run. Appreciate that.
You are welcome. That was a really good, Bears segment.
I agree wholeheartedly. That's Jason Leisure. He's pretty awesome. There's something that happened in the NFL that should have happened in the NFL. We'll explain next on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Pat Tomasulo.
Well, look, I've had a good run.
You're the oldest. We could eliminate you. Tribute to Cyrus would go on. They'd find somebody else.
Hey, wait a minute.
Afternoons on The Score.
They had to do something. It was a bad look for everyone involved that Shedeur Sanders' phone number was available to Jeff Ulbrich. It was on an open iPad. His 21-year-old son saw it and took it down with the intent of making that prank call. I think most reasonable children understand there are certain things that you don't mess with. Dad's or mom's work would be, there's not even a conversation to be had. You don't even have the devil on one shoulder, angel on the other. This is a case where the angel mops up the floor with the devil. You never even get down that road.
Mike Florio talking about Shedeur Sanders being pranked by Jeff Ulbrich's son. And I'm so happy that the league was like, yeah, man, we're not allowing this to go without there being some punishment. And so the league punished the Atlanta Falcons $250,000, which to a franchise is nothing. But they fined Ulbrich, is it Birch?
Ulbrich, you got it.
No, but it's
either Ulbrich, B-R-I-C-H. So I thought it was Ulbrich.
I thought it was B-I-R-C-H.
You know what? It's B-R-I, but he doesn't deserve the correct pronunciation after the actions of the family.
You have to point it out.
You don't want to get sued by the Ulbriches? I think it's the Ulbrichs.
I think it's Ulbrich, too. I think that this might just be a typo. But anyway, he got a fine $100,000.
You'll feel that.
You'll feel that as an assistant coach for sure.
He's hoping that's a typo.
Yeah, he's hoping $1 is what he's hoping.
He was hoping that whole video that his son is like, let's put that out there. Son.
That's AI.
Yeah, that's a deep fake. That's clearly a deep fake.
But think about it, Speaks. Think about, like, I mean, I know that this bar mitzvah is going to set you back a few dollars, but that at least is something that he's working towards.
Oh, absolutely. That is about the love of my son and the hard work of my son. This is paying for the misdeeds of your son.
I cannot believe Ruben prank called Colson Montgomery and told him he's going to swing school.
I can.
He prank called Sean Sears, said, yeah, I'll be there on Sunday for hit and run. And then he's actually not. Freaking right. Hey, he'll be there this week, though. No, Lawrence, you're right.
Think about, like, the lowest dollar amount that wouldn't get you the belt with your parents that you cost them. And then you add on you.
Oh, man.
Look, to this day, I am almost 50 years old. Yeah, and
you got an incident that popped right in your head, didn't it?
Well, one of the.
Because I do.
One of the instructions that I still get from my mother is don't embarrass the family.
Oh, yeah. Well. I can, yeah, you grew up with that in there. I can see that. Knowing you now, I totally, totally get it.
And that ship has sailed now that Lawrence is working with us.
Yeah,
dragging him right the hell down.
All over now.
Oh, yeah. You had a good run.
I did. It went well for a while there.
So the league said that Ulbrich and the Falcons had failed to prevent the disclosure of confidential information.
Yes.
And Ulbrich said himself at a press conference today, my actions were inexcusable. My son's actions were absolutely inexcusable. And for that, we are both deeply sorry. He continued, I promise my son and I will work hard to demonstrate we are better than this. Oh, that hurts. When you have to go to the, I know I'm better than this. And you're a grown-ass man like him? He's got to be fitty, Jeff Ulbrich. He's up there with his gray-ass beard and his six head. You know, he's got to be a 50-year-old man to be embarrassed and chastised by the NFL and be up there and saying we're better than this.
It's been an interesting 48 hours for fathers and sons in professional sports leagues. One, you have the father being embarrassed of the son. The other, you have the son being embarrassed of the father.
And Jeff Ulbrich went on to say, at least I'm not that Halliburton dad. Am I right? Huh?
That's how you should have left it. He should have just walked off with that.
Like, well, at least my son didn't hold up a shirt or a jersey in front of Shador. No. The Ulbrich family is working with the organization to participate in community service initiatives in relation to last week's matter.
Oh, my God. what does he have to go to the Boys and Girls Club and talk to the kids about the dangers of prank calling?
I bet that is going to be one of the things that he ends up doing.
My name is Jeff Ulbrich.
You may know me from that viral moment that I completely set up. And
he plays like a Jerky Boys clip. It's like, now you kids may think that's funny.
But it's not.
I learned it from this CD. What's a CD, sir?
Amanda Hug and Kiss. Lord, can you help me find Amanda Hug and Kiss? Don't call the bar.
I'll see you there with my shoes.
don't do it. This is my son, Jax. Jax, tell him what you did.
I gave the guy the number and just sat in the video like an idiot. Sad,
yeah.
I wasn't even the one making the call. I'm just sitting there.
Yeah, but I was in that all up in the video.
Yeah. Listen, all you kids of the Boys and Girls Club, I know you don't own iPads, but when you are lucky enough to own an iPad,
lock it up.
Lock it down. If you ever work for the NFL and they send you an email, make sure you lock that down. Yeah,
and that's the part where I am glad that the NFL came down on the Falcons. Because we talked about a couple days ago, if this were a player who let confidential stuff out there, there would be repercussions to it. So I'm glad that it was a coach that because that's the whole thing is messed up. The fact that multiple players got pranked, and this is something that the NFL and NFL security is going to have to start wondering, do they have to now come in and say, we're going to be in charge of the dissemination of information of players' info.
Maybe so. And look, sometimes fathers and sons can be in cahoots on stupid-ass stuff like this. Like, we're going with the assumption that the iPad was left open, man. It's like, did the Lagoo dad
tell his son, Jeff Ulbrich,
the
man.
The first base coach is right over there. You can run out there if you want, but don't tell anybody I suggested that.
I'm feeling that the football coach probably isn't going to push his son into doing something like this.
No, but if
this
the son...
This just feels like carelessness.
I know, white trash.
I understand, Lawrence, but if the son's like, Dad, come on, man. You got to get me Shadur's phone number. That's not even his real number. That's just the one he gave you guys. You know it's not his real number. Come on, Dad.
I would like to think, although you make a valid point, but I would like to think that most coaches would be like, get the bleep out of my office. I have raised you poorly.
I just know that there are dads out there who are starved to be pals with their kids.
That's true.
And maybe give in on some of that stuff.
Maybe a coach's life does lend itself to maybe I'm not around as much.
Yes! I'm not around as much. I'm trying to have a relationship with my kid. It's just an innocent prank. Yeah, I don't like Shadur kid either. He was a jackass when I was there in the meeting. Yeah, go ahead.
That's not good.
I'm not saying it's
out of the realm of possibility, but correct. I would like to believe that most this feels like you're working late, you get up, you take your glasses off, you're rubbing your eyes, and you're like, you know what, I'm just gonna go to bed.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, oh, Dad's iPad is open. I wonder what they got going on here. Oh, would you look at that? It's everybody's phone number.
Snotball. You're a snotball. You're a snotball here. Oh, you damn kids.
I've read a lot of people saying that since Jax Ulbrich is a football player, that coach should have some Oklahoma drills going on for him as a punishment.
Mr.
Maybe
Jazz.
Run the stairs.
Hugh Jazz. I need a Hugh Jazz in this bar. Are you here? Wait a minute. You damn.
I also thought that Shadur handled this really well.
He did, but the Ulbrich did not.
He might have been shamed into having to handle it well, but he did handle things very well.
The texture says the kid should have to carry Shador's stuff during training camp.
No,
I
don't want him that close to any of my information.
Don't leave your iPad close.
Gonna prank Travis Hunter next. I don't like that.
Come on, Dad. Come on, hook me up, Dad. It's terrible. Who would ever say such a thing?
When we come back, Speak sent poor Alex on a research project.
Yeah, man.
We will have...
He crushed it.
We will have the answers to what Alex found out as he was trying to figure out what to do about Kyle Tucker, the research project, and its evidence next on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes Show Flashback. Flashback. Flashback.
Danny Parkins.
Kyle Tucker, the discourse here is, you guys correct me if I'm wrong, there's no precedent ever for a guy on a rental signing early, right? It's never happened.
An in-season rental?
I'm saying a player who is a year away from free agency.
Yeah.
Who is playing 1 year with a team and then signing with that team early. It's such an unreasonable ask.
Hold on. I don't agree with that.
That was yesterday. Danny Parkins swung by the show. You will hear him a little bit more frequently leading up to the Radiothon on July 31st. He will pop in every now and again and hang out with us.
Very strong point and perspective. And he does admit that he's not sure that he's right. And he's not entirely right. He's understandably logical, you know, and it's been an interesting conversation. Do the Cubs have a shot to keep Kyle Tucker from going all the way to free agency? And you, Lawrence, have assumed that Kyle Tucker is going to do what he does and go as far as he can, because that's the way they make the way you make the most money in MLB.
Yeah, and considering that the amount of money that he's going to make on the free market, especially with the way that he's playing, my thing is, I think it could have happened. Had it happened immediately.
And there are several examples of that. I gave the assignment to Alex Kuhn this morning. Can you find us somebody in MLB who was traded a year before free agency and then mid-season signed a contract to stay with the new spot. Mookie Betts was the one we threw out yesterday, but Mookie ended up signing officially days before the start of the shortened COVID season, and it was a deal that he had actually agreed to months before.
So while it was in July, and that seems like it was in the season,
sure,
it wasn't, because remember, we were all in our houses and no one was playing baseball.
And there's multiple examples that fit that. Roy Halladay, the former Blue Jay, traded to the Phillies in December 2008, and they worked with him all offseason. Before the 2009 season began, he was signed to an extension in Philly. So that fits your conversation of in the offseason.
You make the trade for the guy, and then you go, hey, here's a whole lot of money that we want to give you right now where you don't have to, and it's guaranteed.
Ken Griffey Jr. signed an extension with the Reds right after he got traded in February of 2000. In the year 2000... And, you know, there's others.
Wait, hold on.
Yeah. In the year 2000.
Oh, hell yeah.
Solid falsetto.
And that's the end for me, voice-wise.
Garrett Crochet traded by the White Sox to the Red Sox, then signed his contract, but he had another year of control. But that's a similar one where you knew, in this sense, you knew the White Sox weren't going to sign him. They sent him to a team that had a chance, and they negotiated and got it done. There are a few where it did happen. Good work by Alex here. Rick Porcello traded to the Red Sox from the Tigers December 2014. On opening day, April 2015, he signed a four-year, $82 million extension, ended up winning the Cy Young during that time with the Red Sox. There's one. Kurt Schilling, 2003.
You're going back an awful long way.
Yeah, I am. Theo and Jed went out to his house for Thanksgiving and arranged...
I'm glad they survived.
Yeah, got him to greenlight the trade. And in April of the next season, he signed a two-year extension. And then the Cardinals did it a bunch of times when they traded for somebody mid-season in the final year of their deal.
They loved doing it.
Mark McGwire, Scott Rolen, Jim Edmonds, all traded to the Cardinals in the final year of their contracts and mid-season signed an extension. So look, there's five, and they are all going back a little bit further, but it's conceivable that you can fall in love with a place and have the conversations, and if you offer him enough, you could buy out the possibility of going all the way. I don't know if it's possible, but I'm not giving up on conceivable from my perspective. Appreciate the research, Alex.
Yeah, great job by you, Alex, to do all that legwork. It is appreciated. I hope that he gives Cubs fans a great summer and a great fall. And then at the end of this, if he wants to go out there and see what is out there, knowing that the Cubs will definitely want him back.
Yeah.
I support that too. Like I want the player to get as much as they can, and with baseball in particular, because of how long you are under the thumb of the team that you are drafted or brought up by, when guys get an opportunity like this, I hope they get every dime of the money that they're owed.
Two more data points from recent years, because you're right, the other ones go back a long way. And these are, you know, they didn't technically happen mid-season in the final year, but there's a corollary. Francisco Lindor traded in January from Cleveland to the Mets, and 6 days before the season begins, he signs a big deal, 10 years, $340 million. So yeah, before the season begins, but they got it done.
I feel like had you thrown a similar number in front of Kyle Tucker, he might have signed.
How about this, though? Matt Chapman signs a one-year deal last year in San Francisco.
And he should have signed a one-year deal with the Chicago Cubs last year, and as a matter of fact, that would still be paying dividends for you because you'd have someone playing third base.
Well, yeah, because he signed the one-year deal last year in San Francisco, and then in the middle of the year, he signed a six-year, $151 million extension because they realized they had a guy. And so that's not a trade, but that's a one-year prove-it, and then he fell in love, and everybody realized they had a nice fit. So that's just last year where a guy decides not to go all the way.
But the amount.
151 is not 400.
And I know it's stupid for us to talk about it like that way.
Not necessarily.
But 150 versus 550.
Yeah.
You know, like it's...
But it's interesting because even the latest projections say 450, 490, 500. And that's why I'm saying 550. Like you might have to...
You got
to
go way over the top.
You got to go over the top. But I think if you go over the top in a summer of Wrigley love, when the magic is there, I think you got a shot if you go way over the top.
Let me ask you this. Shoot, we don't have, I mean, we could talk about it a little bit after tomorrow's game, but what if Tom is saying to Jed, you found the guy that we're going to pay, and we'd love to be able to pay Kyle, but we think that the other guy is a six war player in PCA.
Yeah.
And we have to make sure that we have enough money to pay him.
You got to get Pete now.
If I'm Pete, same thing. I'm waiting.
Pete's an interesting spot because Pete comes from a little bit of money.
But not that type of money.
Not that type of money, but coming from a little bit of money, he might not feel the press to do it.
But maybe he does because, like Council was saying, that you have those times when you're playing really well, and then, there's the other times when you're not. Maybe if you did plop $250 million in front of Pete Crow Armstrong, you'd be like, yeah, I'm with it.
Think fans feel better about you missing on Kyle if you lock up Pete?
Yes. If he goes out to have a 5.5, 6-war season, like, he's on a path to that now. Maybe even more. He's at 2, I think, right now.
Maybe they're going to lock up Pete, though, sooner rather than later.
It might be the easier thing to do.
And then the Kyle thing plays out however it does, and at least you did Pete.
Tonight, the Cubs continue their road trip in Pittsburgh against the Pirates. Pre-game coverage begins at 5:05. That's coming up soon. Pat Hughes, Ron Coomer, Zach Zabeman will be on the call. First pitch is at 5:40 on the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network. For Alex Kuhn, for Chris Tannehill, for my partner Matt Spiegel, I'm Lawrence Holmes saying thank you so much for the love and support that you show this show. We will try to repay the favor tomorrow. We don't know what time we're going to be on because the Cubs game is on at like 11:30. So I'm guessing 2:45, 3 o'clock sounds about right for us. And we'll do our best. Have a wonderful night. Enjoy the game. And we'll talk to you tomorrow.